Sure. It was one of two albums put out by Paul Carignello in 2021. Paul Carignello also released Peut-être, an album for which he did all of the instrumentation and production work, an album in his second language, French. We continue with our conversation with Paul Carignello and invite you to check out their live performance we featured earlier in this program by checking out our website at www.ckut.ca.
I was really impressed by the diversity and the breadth of the musicians that you've worked with, and I was like, all right, and you know, they don't all sound the same. So there's definitely, you're adapting yourself to this encounter with the other. Yeah. I found that really interesting. So there's the Vendettas early on, and this project with your brother, Skinny Bros.
Yeah.
but collaboration has been there. Like, and I, there's definitely a funk pickup over the last few years. I mean, with The Truth, you feel that. The album a couple of years ago, Montreal R&B, as a good example of collaborations. And if I understood right, that was songs that you wrote that didn't fit your voice.
Yeah, like there's, you know, that Montreal R&B record was such a great record. I still think to this day it's the best record I ever done. And the reason is because I got singers to come in who are, and when we talk about surrounding myself with people who are way better than me. You know, when I open my mouth, I sound like a rock and roller. I can't escape it. You know, it's just there's a timbre in there. I can't get rid of it. But I compose in so many different styles, and of course I listen to Al Green, and you know, I love soul music, and I love disco, and I love funk, and you know, sometimes I can make it work, and I can be a punk rocker who likes that stuff, no problem. But Montreal R&B was one of these albums where I got to call all my friends, and I was just like, I'm gonna get a tour this summer together, and we were playing free shows in parks. It was amazing. I got a grant for this thing, and I was like, I'm gonna pay you, come to the studio, we're just gonna have so much fun. It's just because I had so many songs that, you know, I couldn't sing it. I needed Alan Prater. You know, I wrote one of my favorite songs that I've ever written. I had two songs, I actually handed them both to Alan Prater, to be honest, because I respect him and his craft so much. But there's one song called The Rain Makes Me Miss New Orleans. And I wrote that I'd come back from New Orleans, a trip in New Orleans, and I was like, it was raining and it was all humid in Montreal, and I was like, wow, the rain makes me miss New Orleans. Every time it rains, and I just took that line and I was like, I got a song. And there was another one called What Love Has Done to You. And these are two songs that, you know, I sang them. I sang a demo. But I mean, if you listen to the demo and the Alan Prater, like these songs, like it, the only difference is one vocal take. But my Lord, what a difference. I mean, it takes it from this shitty kind of pretend rock guy trying to fake his way through it and the real deal. That record for me was so much fun. And right, you know, like, but I love writing a good love song. I love writing a good pop song. I love good pop songs. You know, I think there's a real craft to it. I think R&B is a diverse style in itself. You know, there I touched a lot of the rhythm and like the original rhythm and blues, but then I was doing some stuff that was way more modern, trappy kind of beats. And so it really touched on a lot of different things. And that record for me is still to this day my favorite record. And I put it on. It's the only record I listen to, but I think it's because I'm not singing. It's not my voice. So it's like I feel totally comfortable putting it on and showing it off, you know? But I never put on my own stuff. I'm too shy to go like, oh, listen to my new record. But Montreal R&B, every once in a while I put on, and even in my DJ sets, I'll fit it in, you know? I love that record. Still to this day love that record.
It's a great record. But there's really, you have 18 albums of your own material, and it's pretty impressive. And I have to say, and there's originality and creativity, and you're evolving all the time, which I think is all to kudos. I mean, you've never sat in your pocket. And you may have that rocker delivery. You may have that punk background, and you know some of the attitude comes through. But I really, it's the expansive music, and that leads me last year you gave an interview where you said the best music in the world comes from the blues. Mm. It comes from struggle, from wanting things to change and be better. And we're talking about R&B. We're talking about, you know, reggae music. When you talk about the blues as this root,
yeah,
what are you talking about? What are you aiming? What are you telling people about the essence of music?
Well, I mean, people. So when you listen to blues music, right? People would always go, it's always about love loss, and it's about getting on a train and going somewhere. What, you know, these simple themes, right? And you realize that. You know, and people think that it's simple, or that these subjects are so small or so personal, but those were huge statements for Black people in the Southern United States to be saying, "I'm getting on a train and I'm going somewhere freely." You know, I'm getting to choose who I'm with. You know, these were songs that were developing out of the 1800s post-slavery. There's something about. You know, just bragging about having money in your pocket, you know, just like I love the idea that the themes reflect the rebellion and the desire to be free, and it's like speaking truth to a system that is oppressive. And I think about Black Swan was a record label that only released black singers. It was a Black owned indie record, right? So this was like an indie label. The first indie label in the United States was Black Swan. And Black Swan I find that act in itself revolutionary. And they used to do BD Woman Blues and stuff like that. You know, they were talking about lesbians. They were talking about hypersexuality. Like, I mean, you can listen to some of these old blues songs. They're incredibly explicit. We think that, we invented sex, drugs, and rock and roll in the 60s, or that I don't know, that the rappers of today are so incredibly explicit and offensive. No, you can go back to the early 20th century and listen to early recordings.
A lot by women.
Yes, yep. And that stuff was revolutionary. That was a revolutionary act that was radical and impressive, and it marked me. So, I mean, just even that early stuff, for sure. But, like, you know, you go and listen to Robert Johnson, just his, like, his, I don't know, 40, 50 recordings, whatever, that exist. It's one guy on a guitar, just one microphone. You know, there's just like, and the force of that music for me was so influential. Listening to that changed me. When I must have been about 13, I started to play harmonica. I was like, and not only that, so you get all that Southern stuff. And then, you know, you can go back to the Lead Belly recordings, and they're political and revolutionary and brilliant. But then you can move on up, you know, and you get that Chicago sound and all that Muddy Waters stuff and Howlin' Wolf, and all that stuff to me sounds like punk rock. You know, Bo Diddley is proto-punk too. He has albums that I would call punk rock, you know. You take that, combine it with Willie Dixon being that just such a brilliant songwriter it's like this kind of bridge between like old blues and gospel, but like modern pop songwriting. Willie Dixon is the key. For me, it's like I can almost trace it all the way back to that. So in the blues, there's like, if you want to be a songwriting, if you want to do a course in songwriting, it's all in the blues. You can go from like the really modern stuff, almost becoming proto-punk, with the late, like, you know, later stuff in Bo Diddley. The middle stuff sounds like rock and roll and punk for sure, but the early stuff is like folk and funk and jazz. It's like, it's all there. All the songwriting can be laid out for you. I still to this day put on Willie Dixon, and I'm blown away at the diversity in the songwriting. People think blues is always the same thing. A Willie Dixon record, it's a unique sounding greatest hits. Everything Willie Dixon did was brilliant. So the blues for me, it's like, it's not just about songwriting. It's about that there's a political edge, whether it's subversively being spoken or not. There's also this darkness. Blues music, it's like, it's supposed to be, sometimes it's like almost a jolly kind of approach. It's like an upbeat song, but they're singing about sometimes the most hard-lived, heartfelt, saddest themes. And I'm like, I'm impressed at being able to take this sort of like upbeat, up-tempo, make you feel good about it. But like, what themes in the songs being so sad? It's, I love that salty sweet being shoved together. I think that's what makes great hits too, is when you can take that sweet and the salty flavor and just make it taste good.
You know, I just finished this series on Bette Davis, and that's what she said. Ultimately, what she was trying to achieve was the rawness of the blues.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of bare, naked body and soul that comes out through that music.
Makes total sense. And you know, I put her in that extension of like, what who is going to be, she's the closest thing to the blues at post Jimi Hendrix, I'd say. You know, I mean, I always say this is a weird quote about Jimi Hendrix, but I'm like, before Jimi Hendrix, there were no rock guitar players. But after Jimi Hendrix, there were no blues guitar players. It was done, you know, like Jimi Hendrix changed everything for everybody. But the closest thing, yeah, Bette Davis. I love Bette Davis. It's punk rock. It's blues. It's funk. It's feminist. It's revolutionary. It's got all the things I love in there.
Which you produce in your music.
Oh,
really?
Thank you so much. Really? You know, it's definitely what I try. What I'm trying to do. It's definitely been the goal from the beginning, and. You know, I just love working with people that I love too. And I hope that comes out too. You know, you asked me earlier, okay, look, you know, my biggest success in French is a song called Une Rose Noire. And it was kind of like, it's a reggae thing, but it's like a Naya Bingy. It was such an odd thing to bring to pop Quebec, you know?
Perfect place to actually end an interview, but I have to ask one or two more questions.
No,
all right,
of course.
And that's not just the music, it's your engagement. And your engagement, your l'engagement, is not just in your music. Let's talk about your work with the community, and let's talk about, just briefly, because there's another one coming up, Montreal versus Racism.
Yeah, this year.
So that's coming back this year, so good time to just, like...
Yeah, I've always, even when I, you know, look, I'm not the most famous person in the world, but I can throw my weight behind things, and, you know, I know a lot of people in the city, so, you know, we can get a lot of people out, and we, you know... So I've worked with a lot of different organizations, a lot of anti-poverty groups in the past. I mean, that was really my raison d'être for a long time, because just having worked with so many people who are homeless or who wouldn't, you know, I even hate that word, because it's like they're in transition a lot of the time, and it was always so difficult. And there's such this callous attitude I find in Montreal toward the homeless, and I just want people to just give a shit. So a lot of anti-poverty groups I was working with for a long time. But then, you know, when I, cause I eventually bought a place and built a studio in NDG, and I started a festival called La Semaine des Arts NDG, and at the beginning when I did it, it was like, okay, it can't really be that political. I just wanted free events for our children. My son, I think, was 2 at the time. And there was nothing happening in that area of the city. And I was like, we got to have events, and I want them to be free, and I want them for everybody, and I want kids to come, and you know. And so I became a festival organizer for like 7 years. I ran a festival, which then the connections you make through that are so different. Like suddenly you're speaking to like politicians and mayors and, you know, city councilors and, you know, talking about discretionary funds with politicians and just trying to squeeze as much out of everybody. But I always treated that like I'm going to do the Robin Hood thing, where I'm just, everything's going to be free, and I'm going to steal as much money from the city and the province as possible and throw it at the people, you know? That was always my philosophy. And to this day, it's celebrating, I think it's 13th year. I no longer run it, but I still help out. But I also, you know, and then after that, I started the Montreal versus Racism, which, you know, that's something that I've always been outspokenly anti-racist. I used to work with anti-racist groups as well. Certainly in the Vendetta days and the punk rock days, you had to. And in more recent times, you know, Montreal, we thought we had kicked out all the neo-Nazis, and they keep coming back, you know. And I remember seeing a couple of them on buses in NDG and just being beside myself, you know. And it's already upsetting when you hear that they're mobilizing. But they're mobilizing in my neighborhood. And I was like, that's it. I'm putting together concert. Like, we're gonna do it. I'm gonna just get all my friends, we're gonna do it for free, and we're gonna say, like, get the fuck out of here. And we were and it was just such a huge success, and so many people wanted to participate, and it was actually a lot of fun. And it de-radicalized the not just being against racism, like not just being anti-racist in your own life or being like, oh, I don't like racism, being anti-racist, you know, taking that and saying it's that's an important step, an important angle to take, you know. But it also led me to some great things in NDG. That year it was quite sad. When we started Montreal versus Racism, Nicholas Gibbs, a black man, was shot in NDG by the police. And it really shot the festival into the sort of spotlight, because it became, you know, we started to have to speak a little bit on that. And that was the first time that the Gibbs family spoke publicly. And it was at that concert. And I became close with some of the Gibbs family. And at one point, they were looking for a mural to pay homage. And they needed a huge space, you know. And my studio, my garage, has a huge space. So I offered it up, and it's this beautiful, it's this great sort of touristy stop now in NDG. And it reminds people about police violence and how we need, you know, we're talking about, I talk a lot about defunding the police. And this is one of those things, a reminder that's there.
big surprise. I'd like to tell you that it's under control. But everybody's talking about the 1, 2, 3. Everybody's talking about uncertainty. Everybody's talking with the thumbs on the screen. Broken dreams, baby, if you ask me, it's nothing but another day. Connection. Nobody knows how it all goes down, but we know it's around the corner. We can hear that sound.
On CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal, on Funky Revolutions with myself, Khalid, in conversation with Paul Caraniello. Really a big thanks to him and the Truth for coming in and, well, re-stilling some vibes in the tiny room as part of CKUT sessions. You can watch the video recording of that live performance on CKUT.ca. Really appreciate the work of Paul Caraniello, his engagement, as you heard, and his collaborations. We heard in this last half hour, Paul Caraniello starting with Lies, for a title track to his release from last year, One of Two. We also heard Our Tomorrow, collaborating with Ezra Lewis and the Adam Brown. We also had Une Rose Noire, and finally, Nothing But Another Day, Paul Caraniello featuring Isa. On CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal, we'll be back after these brief messages, bringing down the mothership and handing you over to Howard Stretchcar in the next half hour.
If it appears that COVID-19 symptoms like cough, fever, sore throat, and loss of taste and smell are beginning to present themselves, you can begin to self-isolate and take a rapid test at home. After getting your test results, you can learn more about proper self-isolation guidelines by visiting quebec.ca/self-isolating. This information is there to help protect you and everyone living under the same roof. All of us can make a difference, so let's keep making sure all of us are safe. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
CKUT 90.3 FM. Spent most of our flight hanging with Paul Caraniello in a performance with The Truth. In this last set, Miss Janet and the Broker, R&H, an album from earlier this year, Some King Funk. Then we followed with Canadians from last year, Badge Epoque, Scroll was the LP they released, Consensus Reality. Then another album from towards the end of last year as well, Dylan and Cartledge, and Hope Above Adversity with Hang My Head. In the spirit of our interview and the vibes that have inspired Mr. Caraniello, this is I, Kong and Jamaica. They talk about...
Democracy. More of ours. My name was Khalid. This, of course, was the Mothership Connection, Funky Revolutions. Pleasure to have been with you again this week. I'm going to end on the vibe of the last few weeks when we were looking at Their Music Was Hot, the carnal female funk of the 1970s. This never made it up there, and it's not, well, it's still in the vein. From 1979, self-titled LP from Tana Gardner, When You Touch Me. Reminding you, as usual, free your mind, our collective ass will follow. Peace. We'll be right back.
Thank you. is Vern Maytone, and I live in Montreal, Canada. And every Saturday from 4 to 7 p.m., I listen to the West Indian Rhythm on CKUT 90.3 FM with the one and only Howard Stretch Carr. Na na na.
Radio.
Soundwaves in the air.
CKUT.
Montreal, Canada.
CKUT.
It's time to take sampling to a whole new level.
Pleasant good afternoon to you, Montreal. Welcome to West Indian Rhythms. My name is Howard Carr. And the co-host of the show,
Thief.
Sanka. And along with the rest of the crew.
DJ.